Chapter 46. His two brothers were Bajo vagabonds who had appeared lately in Sambar and had been allowed to take possession of a tumble-down abandoned hut on three posts, belonging to Lingard and company, and standing just outside their fence. Ally disapproved of the favor shown to those strangers. Any kind of dwelling was valuable in Sambar at that time, and if Master did not want that old rotten house he might have given it to him, Ali, who was his servant, instead of bestowing it upon those bad men. Everybody knew they were bad. It was well known that they had stolen a boat from Inapari, who was very aged and feeble and had no sons, and that afterwards, by the truculent recklessness of their demeanor, they had frightened the poor old man into holding his tongue about it. Yet everybody knew of it. It was one of the tolerated scandals of Sambar, disapproved and accepted, a manifestation of that base acquiescence in success, of that inexpressed and cowardly toleration of strength that exists, infamous and irremediable, at the bottom of all hearts, in all societies. Whenever men congregate, in bigger and more virtuous places than Sambar, and in Sambar also, where, as in other places, one man could steal a boat with impunity, while another would have no right to look at a paddle. Elmer, leaning back in his chair, meditated. The more he thought, the more he felt convinced that Banjer and his brothers were exactly the men he wanted. Those fellows were sea gypsies, and could disappear without attracting notice, and if they returned, nobody and Lingard least of all would dream of seeking information from them. Moreover, they had no personal interest of any kind in Sambar affairs, had taken no sides, would know nothing anyway. He called in a strong voice. Mrs. Willems. She came out quickly, almost startling him, so much did she appear as though as he had surged up through the floor, on the other side of the table. The lamp was between them, and Almayer moved it aside, looking up at her from his chair. She was crying. She was crying gently, silently, in a ceaseless welling up of tears, that did not fall in drops, but seemed to overflow in a clear sheet from under her eyelids, seemed to flow at once all over her face, her cheeks, and over her chin that glistened with moisture in the light. Her breast and her shoulders were shaken repeatedly by a convulsive and noiseless catching in her breath, and after every spasmodic sob her sorrowful little head, tied up in a red kerchief, trembled on her long neck, round which her bony hand gathered, and clasped the disarranged dress. "Compose yourself, Mrs. Willems," said Elmer. She emitted an inarticulate sound that seemed to be a faint, a very far off, a hardly audible cry of mortal distress. Then the tears went on flowing in profound stillness. "You must understand that I have told you all this, because I am your friend, real friend," said Elmer, after looking at her for some time with visible dissatisfaction. "Who, his wife, ought to know the danger he is in. Captain Lingard is a terrible man, you know," she blubbered out, sniffing and sobbing together. "Do you speak the truth now? Upon my word of honor, on the head of my child," protested Elmer. "Had to deceive you till now, because of Captain Lingard. But I couldn't bear it. Think only what a risk I run in telling you, if ever Lingard was to know. Why should I do it? Pure friendship. Dear Peter was my colleague in Macassar for years, you know. What shall I do? What shall I do?" she exclaimed, faintly, looking around on every side, as if she could not make up her mind which way to rush off. "You must help him to clear out, now Lingard is away. He offended Lingard, and that's no joke. Lingard said he would kill him. He will do it too," said Elmer, earnestly. She wrung her hands. "H. The wicked man. The wicked, wicked man," she moaned, swaying her body from side to side. "Yes. Yes. He is terrible," assented Elmer. "You must not lose any time. I say, do you understand me, Mrs. Willems? Think of your husband. Of your poor husband. How happy he will be. You will bring him his life, actually his life. Think of him." She ceased her swaying movement, and now, with her head sunk between her shoulders, she hugged herself with both her arms, and she stared at Almayer with wild eyes, while her teeth chattered, rattling violently and uninterruptedly, with a very loud sound, in the deep peace of the house. "Oh, Mother of God!" she wailed. "I am a miserable woman. Will he forgive me? The poor, innocent man. Will he forgive me? Oh, Mr. Almayer, he is so severe. Oh, help me. I dare not. You don't know what I've done to him. I daren't. I can't. God help me." The last words came in a despairing cry. Had she been flayed alive, she could not have sent to heaven a more terrible, a more ear-trending and anguished plaint. "S.H. S.H.," hissed Almayer, jumping up. "Who will wake up everybody with your shouting?" She kept on sobbing then without any noise, and Almayer stared at her in boundless astonishment. The idea that, maybe, he had done wrong by confiding in her, upset him so much that for a moment he could not find a connected thought in his head. At last he said, "Swear to you, that your husband is in such a position, that he would welcome the devil. Listen well to me. The devil himself, if the devil came to him in a canoe. Unless I am much mistaken," he added, under his breath. "Then again, loudly colon if you have any little difference, to make up with him, I assure you I swear to you this is your time." The ardently persuasive tone of his words, he thought, would have carried irresistible conviction to a graven image. He noticed with satisfaction that Joanna seemed to have got some inkling of his meaning. He continued, speaking slowly, "Look here, Mrs. Willems. I can't do anything. Daren't. But I will tell you what I will do. There will come here in about 10 minutes a beauteous man. You know the language. You are from Macassar. He has a large canoe. He can take you there. To the new Raja's clearing. Tell him. They are three brothers, ready for anything, if you pay them. You have some money, haven't you?" She stood perhaps listening, but giving no sign of intelligence, and stared at the floor in sudden immobility, as if the horror of the situation, the overwhelming sense of her own wickedness, and of her husband's great danger, had stunned her brain, her heart, her will had left her no faculty, but that of breathing, and of keeping on her feet. Almayer swore to himself with much mental profanity that he had never seen a more useless, a more stupid being. "Do you hear me?" he said, raising his voice. "Oh, try to understand. Have you any money? Money. Dollars. Guilders. Money. What's the matter with you?" Without raising her eyes, she said, in a voice that sounded weak and undecided, as if as he had been making a desperate effort of memory, "The house has been sold. Mr. Hudig was angry." Almayer gripped the edge of the table with all his strength. He resisted manfully an almost uncontrollable impulse to fly at her and box her ears. "It was sold for money, I suppose," he said with studied and incisive calmness. "Ave, you got it? Who has got it?" She looked up at him, raising her swollen eyelids with a great effort, in a sorrowful expression of her drooping mouth, of her whole besmirched and tear-stained face. She whispered resignedly, "Leonard had some. He wanted to get married. And Uncle Antonio, he sat at the door, and would not go away. And Agustina, she is so poor. And so many, many children, little children. And lose the engineer. He never said a word against my husband. Also our cousin Maria. She came and shouted, and my head was so bad, and my heart was worse. Then cousin Salvador and old Daniel da Souza, who..." Almayer had listened to her speechless with rage. He thought, "I must give money now to that idiot. Must get her out of the way now before Lingard is back." He made two attempts to speak, before he managed to burst out, "I don't want to know their blasted names. Tell me, did all those infernal people leave you anything? To you. That's what I want to know." "I have $215, said Joanna, in a frightened tone. Almayer breathed freely. He spoke with great friendliness, "That will do. It isn't much, but it will do. Now when the man comes, I will be out of the way. You speak to him. Give him some money, only a little, mind. And promise more. Then when you get there, you will be guided by your husband, of course. And don't forget to tell him that Captain Lingard is at the mouth of the river, the northern entrance. You will remember, won't you? The northern branch. Lingard is death." Joanna shivered. Almayer went on rapidly, "I would have given you money if you had wanted it. Pon my word. Tell your husband I've sent you to him. And tell him not to lose any time. And also say to him from me that we shall meet someday. That I could not die happy unless I met him once more. Only once. I love him, you know. I prove it. Tremendous risk to me this business is." Joanna snatched his hand, and before he knew what she would be at, pressed it to her lips. "Mrs. Willems, don't. What are you?" Dot cried to the abashed Almayer, tearing his hand away. "Oh, you are good," she cried, with sudden exultation. "You are noble. Dot dot I shall pray every day dot 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 to all the saints dot 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 I shall. Dot, never mind. Dot dot never mind," stammered out Almayer, confusedly, without knowing very well what he was saying. "Why look out for Lingard. Dot 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 I am happy to be able dot 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 in your sad situation dot 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 believe me. Dot dot." They stood with the table between them, Joanna looking down, and her face, in the half-light above the lamp, appeared like a soiled carving of old ivory, a carving, with accentuated anxious hollows, of old, very old ivory. Almayer looked at her, mistrustful, hopeful. He was saying to himself, "How frail she is. I could upset her by blowing at her. She seems to have got some idea of what must be done, but will she have the strength to carry it through? I must trust to luck now." Somewhere far in the back courtyard, Ali's voice rang suddenly in angry remonstrance. "Why did you shut the gate, O father of all mischief? You a watchman. You are only a wild man. Did I not tell you I was coming back? You. Dot, I am off, Mrs. Willems," exclaimed Almayer. "Tea, that man is here with my servant. Be calm. Try to." Dot, he heard the footsteps of the two men in the passage, and without finishing his sentence ran rapidly down the steps towards the riverside. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.